The Bleeding Shadow by Joe R. Lansdale. Music may have charms to soothe the savage breast, but as the down-on-his-luck private eye in the gritty story that follows learns, it also has charms that can open doors, including doors to places where nobody ought to go. Prolific Texas writer Joe R. Lansdale has won the Edgar Award, the British Fantasy Award, the American Horror Award, the American Mystery Award, the International Crime Writers Award, and 7 Bram Stoker Awards. Although perhaps best known for horror thrillers such as The Night Runners, Bubba Hotep, The Bottoms, The God of the Razor, and The Drive-In, he also writes the popular Hap Collins and Leonard Pine mystery series, Savage Season, Mucho Mojo, The Two-Bear Mambo, Bad Chili, Rumble Tumble, Captain's Outrageous, as well as Western novels such as Texas Night Rider and Blood Dance, and totally unclassifiable cross-genre novels such as Zeppelin's West, The Magic Wagon, and Flaming London. His other novels include Dead in the West, The Big Blow, Sunset and Sawdust, Act of Love, Freezer Burn, Waltz of Shadows, The Drive-In 2, not just one of them sequels, and Leather Maiden. He has also contributed novels to series such as Batman and Tarzan. His many short stories have been collected in By Bizarre Hands, Tight Little Stitches in a Dead Man's Back, The Shadows, Kith and Kin, The Long Ones, Stories by Mama Lansdale's Youngest Boy, Bestsellers Guaranteed, On the Far Side of the Cadillac Desert with the Dead Folks, Electric Gumbo, Rider of the Purple Rage, A Fistful of Stories, Steppin' Out, Summer 68, Bumper Crop, The Good, the Bad, and the Indifferent, Selected Stories by Joe R. Lansdale, For a Few Stories More, Mad Dog Summer and Other Stories, The King and Other Stories, and High Cotton, Selected Stories of Joe R. Lansdale. As editor, he has produced the anthologies The Best of the West, Retro Pulp Tales, Son of Retro Pulp Tales, with his son Keith Lansdale, Razored Saddles, with Pat Labruto, Dark at Heart, All New Tales of Dark Suspense, with his wife Karen Lansdale, The Horror Hall of Fame, The Stoker Winners, and the Robert E. Howard Tribute Anthology, Cross Plains Universe, with Scott A. Cupp. An anthology in tribute to Lansdale's work is Lords of the Razor. His most recent books are a new collection, Dead Man's Road, An Omnibus, Flaming Zeppelins, The Adventures of Ned the Seal, and, as editor, a new anthology, Crucified Dreams. He lives with his family in Nacogdoches, Texas.
I was down at the Blue Light Joint that night, finishing off some ribs and listening to some blues when in walked Alma May. She was looking good, too. Had a dress on that fit her the way a dress ought to fit every woman in the world. She was wearing a little flat hat that leaned to one side, like an unbalanced plate on a waiter's palm. The high heels she had on made her legs look tight and way all right. The light wasn't all that good in the joint, which is one of its appeals. It sometimes helps a man or a woman get along in a way the daylight wouldn't stand. But I knew Alma May enough to know light didn't matter. She'd look good wearing a sack and a paper hat. There was something about her face that showed me right off she was worried that things weren't right. She was glancing left and right like she was in some big city trying to cross a busy street and not get hit by a car. I got my bottle of beer, left out from my table, and went over to her. Then I knew why she'd been looking around like that. She said,
"I was looking for you, Richard."
"Say you were," I said. "Well, you done found me." The way she stared at me wiped a grin off my face. "Something wrong, Alma May?"
"Maybe. I don't know. I got to talk, though. Thought you'd be here, and I was wondering you might want to come by my place."
"When?"
"Now."
"All right."
"But don't get no business in mind," she said. "This isn't like the old days. I need your help, and I need to know I can count on you."
"Well, I kind of like the kind of business we used to do. But all right, we're friends. It's cool."
"I hoped you'd say that."
"You got a car?" I said. She shook her head.
"No, I had a friend drop me off."
I thought, "Friend, sure. All right, then," I said. "Let's strut on out." I guess you could say it's a shame Alma May makes her money turning tricks. But when you're the one paying for the tricks, and you are one of her satisfied customers, you feel different. Right then, anyway. Later, you feel guilty. Like maybe you done peed on a Mona Lisa, 'cause that gal, she was one fine dark-skinned woman who should have got better than 1,000 rides and enough money to buy some eats and make some coffee in the morning. She deserved something good. Should have found and married a man with a steady job that could have done all right by her. But that hadn't happened. Me and her had a bit of something once, and it wasn't just business. Money changing hands after she got me feeling good. No, it was more than that, but we couldn't work it out. She was in the life and didn't know how to get out. And as for deserving something better, that wasn't me. What I had were a couple of nice suits, some two-tone shoes, a hat, and a gun. 45 caliber automatic, like they'd used in the war a few years back. Alma Mae got a little on the dope, too, and though she shook it, it had dropped her down deep. Way I figured she wasn't never climbing out of that hole, and it didn't have nothing to do with dope now. What it had to do with was time. You get a window open now and again, and if you don't crawl through it, it closes. I know. My window had closed some time back. It made me mad all the time. We were in my Chevy. A 6-year-old car, a 48 model. I'd had it reworked a bit at a time. New tires, fresh windshield, nice seat covers, and so on. It was shiny and special. We were driving along, making good time on the highway, the lights racing over the cement, making the recent rain in the rut shine like the knees of old dress pants. "What you need me for?" I asked.
"It's a little complicated,"
she said. "Why me?"
"I don't know. You've always been good to me, and once we had a thing going."
"We did," I said.
"What happened to it?"
I shrugged. "It quit going."
"It did, didn't it? Sometimes I wish it hadn't."
"Sometimes I wish a lot of things," I said. She leaned back in the seat and opened a purse and got out a cigarette and lit it, then rolled down the window. She remembered I didn't like cigarette smoke. I never had got on the tobacco. It took your wind, and it stunk, and it made your breath bad, too. I hated when it got my clothes.
"You're the only one I could tell this to,"
she said.
"The only one that would listen to me and not think I've been with the needle in my arm. You know what I'm saying?"
"Sure, baby, I know."
"I sound to you like I've been bad?"
"No, you sound all right. I mean, you're talking a little odd, but not like you're out of your head."
"Drunk?"
"Nope. Just like you had a bad dream and want to tell someone."
"That's closer,"
she said.
"That ain't it. But that's much closer than any needle of whiskey or wine."
Almay's place is on the outskirts of town. It's the one thing she got out of life that ain't bad. It's not a mansion. It's small, but it's tight and bright in the daylight, all painted up a canary yellow color with deep blue trim. It didn't look bad in the moonlight. Alma Mae didn't work with a pimp. She didn't need one. She was well known around town. She had her clientele. They were all safe, she told me once. About a third of them were white folks from the other side of the tracks, up there in the proper part of Tylertown. What she had besides them was a dead mother and a runaway father, and a brother, Tootie, who liked to travel around, play blues, and suck that bottle. He was always needing something. And Alma Mae, in spite of her own demons, had always managed to make sure he got it. That was another reason me and her had to split the sheets. That brother of hers was a grown-ass man, and he lived with his mother and let her tote his water. When the mama died, he sort of went to pieces. Alma Mae took the mama's part over, keeping Tootie and whiskey and biscuits, even bought him a guitar. He lived off her whoring money, and it didn't bother him none. I didn't like him. But I will say this, that boy could play the blues. When we were inside her house, she unpinned her hat from her hair and sailed it across the room and into a chair. She said,
"You want a drink?"
"I ain't gonna say no, long as it ain't too weak, and be sure to put it in a dirty glass." She smiled. I watched from the living room doorway as she went and got a bottle out from under the kitchen sink, showing me how tight that dress fit across her bottom when she bent over. She pulled some glasses off a shelf, came back with a stiff one. We drank a little of it, still standing, leaning against the door frame between living room and kitchen. We finally sat on the couch. She sat on the far end just to make sure I remembered while we were there. She said,
"It's Tootie."
I swigged down the drink real quick, said, "I'm gone." As I went by the couch, she grabbed my hand.
"Don't be that way, baby."
"Now I'm baby," I said.
"Hear me out, honey, please. You don't owe me, but can you pretend you do?"
"Hell," I said, and went and sat down on the couch. She moved, said,
"I want you to listen."
"All right," I said.
"First off, I can't pay you, except maybe in trade."
"Not that way," I said. "You and me, we do this, it ain't trade. Call it a favor. I do a little detective stuff now and then for folks I know. Folks have recommended me to others. I don't have a license. Black people couldn't get a license to shit broken glass in this town. But I was pretty good at what I did. I learned it the hard way, and not all of it was legal. I guess I'm a kind of private eye, only I'm really private. I'm so private I might be more of a secret eye."
"Best thing to do is listen to this," she said. "It cuts back on some explanation."
There was a little record player on a table by the window, a stack of records. She went over and opened the player box and turned it on. The record she wanted was already on it. She lifted up the needle and set it right, stepped back and looked at me. Oh, she was oh so fine. I looked at her and thought, maybe I should have stuck with her, brother or no brother. She could melt butter from 10 feet away the way she looked. And then the music started to play. It was Tootie's voice. I recognized that right away. I had heard him plenty. Like I said, he wasn't much as a person, willing to do anything so he could lay back and play that guitar, slide a pocket knife along the strings to squeal out just the right sound. But he was good at the blues, of that there ain't no denying. His voice was high and lonesome, and the way he played that guitar, it was hard to imagine how he could get the sounds out of it he got. "He brought me over here to listen to records," I said. She shook her head. She lifted up the needle, stopped the record, and took it off. She had another in a little paper cover, and she took it out and put it on, dropped the needle down.
"Now listen to this."
First lick or two, I could tell right off it was Tootie. But then there came a kind of turn in the music where it got so strange the hair on the back of my neck stood up. And then Tootie started to sing, and the hair on the back of my hands and arms stood up. The air in the room got thick and the lights got dim, and shadows came out of the corners and sat on the couch with me. I ain't kidding about that part. The room was suddenly full of them, and I could hear what sounded like a bird trapped at the ceiling, fluttering fast and hard, looking for a way out. Then the music changed again, and it was like I had been dropped down a well, and it was a long drop. And then it was like those shadows were folding around me in a wash of dirty water. The room stunk of something foul. The guitar no longer sounded like a guitar, and Tootie's voice was no longer like a voice. It was like someone dragging a razor over concrete while trying to yodel with a throat full of glass. There was something inside the music, something that squished and scuttled and honked and raved, something unsettling, like a snake in a satin glove. "Cut it off," I said. But Alma May had already done it. She said,
"That's as far as I've ever let it go. It's all I can do to move to cut it off. It feels like it's getting more powerful the more it plays. I don't want to hear the rest of it. I don't know if I can take it. How can that be, Richard? How can that be with just sounds?"
I was actually feeling weak, like I'd just come back from a bout with the flu and someone had beat my ass. I said, "More powerful? How do you mean?"
"Ain't that what you think? Ain't that how it sounds like it's getting stronger?"
I nodded. "Yeah."
"And the room?"
"The shadows?" I said. "I didn't just imagine it?"
"No,"
she said.
"Only every time I've heard it, it's been a little different. The notes get darker. The guitar licks, they cut something inside me, and each time it's something different and something deeper. I don't know if it makes me feel good or it makes me feel bad, but it sure makes me feel.
Yeah, I said, because I couldn't find anything else to say.
Tootie sent me that record. He sent a note that said, play it when you have to. That's what it said. That's all it said. What's that mean?
I don't know. But I got to wonder why Tootie would send it to you in the first place. Why would he want you to hear something makes you almost sick? And how in hell could he do that, make that kind of sound, I mean? She shook her head.
I don't know. Someday, I'm going to play it all the way through.
I wouldn't, I said.
Why?
You heard it. I figure it only gets worse. I don't understand it, but I know I don't like it.
Yeah,
she said, putting the record back in the paper sheath.
I know. But it's so strange. I've never heard anything like it.
And I don't want to hear anything like it again.
Still, you have to wonder.
What I wonder is what I was wondering before. Why would he send this shit to you?
I think he's proud of it. There's nothing like it. It's original.
I'll give it that, I said. So what do you want with me?
I want you to find Tootie.
Why?
Because I don't think he's right. I think he needs help. I mean this, it makes me think he's somewhere he shouldn't be.
But yeah, you want to play it all the way through, I said.
What I know is I don't like that. I don't like Tootie being associated with it, and I don't know why. Richard, I want you to find him.
Where did the record come from? She got the sheaf and brought it to me. I could see through the little donut in the sheath where the label on the record ought to be. Nothing but disc. The package itself was like wrapping paper you put meat in. It was stained. I said, I think he paid some place to let him record. I said, question is, what place? You have an address where this came from?
I do.
She went and got a large manila envelope and brought it to me.
It came in this.
I looked at the writing on the front. It had as a return address the Hotel Champion. She showed me the note. It was on a piece of really cheap stationery that said the Hotel Champion and had a phone number and an address in Dallas. The stationery looked old and it was sun-faded.
I called them,
she said,
but they didn't know anything about him. They'd never heard of him. I could go look myself, but I'm a little afraid. Besides, you know, I got clients and I got to make the house payment.
I didn't like hearing about that. Knowing what kind of clients she meant and how she was going to make that money. I said, all right, what you want me to do?
Find him.
And then what?
Bring him home.
And if he don't want to come back?
I've seen you work. Bring him home to me. Just don't lose that temper of yours.
I turned the record around and around in my hands. I said, I'll go take a look. I won't promise anything more than that. He wants to come, I'll bring him back. He doesn't. I might be inclined to break his leg and bring him back. You know I don't like him.
I know, but don't hurt him.
If he comes easy, I'll do that. If he doesn't, I let him stay. Come back and tell you where he is and how he is. How about that?
That's good enough,
she said.
Find out what this is all about. He's got me scared, Richard.
It's just bad sounds, I said. Tootie was probably high on something when he recorded it. Thought it was good at the time. Sent it to you because he thought he was the coolest thing since Robert Johnson.
Who?
Oh, never mind. But I figure when he got over his hop, he probably didn't even remember he mailed it.
Don't try and tell me you've heard anything like this. That listening to it didn't make you feel like your skin was going to pull off your bones. That some part of it made you want to dip in the dark and learn to like it. Tell me it wasn't like that. Tell me it wasn't like walking out in front of a car and the headlights in your face. And you just wanted to step out there even though it scared hell out of you and you knew it was the devil or something even worse at the wheel. Tell me you didn't feel something like that.
I couldn't. So I didn't say anything. I just sat there and sweated. The sound of that music still shaking down deep in my bones, boiling my blood. Here's the thing. I said. I'll do it. But you got to give me a photograph of Tootie if you got one, and a record so you don't play it no more. She studied me a moment.
I hate that thing,
she said, nodding at the record in my hands.
But somehow I feel attached to it. Like getting rid of it is getting rid of a piece of me.
That's the deal.
All right,
she said.
Take it. But take it now.
Motoring along by myself in the Chevy, the moon high and bright, all I could think of was that music, or whatever that sound was. It was stuck in my head like an axe. I had the record on the seat beside me, had Tootie's note and envelope, the photograph Alma May had given me. Part of me wanted to drive back to Alma May and tell her no, and never mind, here's the record back. But another part of me, the dumb part, wanted to know where and how and why that record had been made. Curiosity, it just about gets us all. Where I live is a rickety third-floor walk-up. It's got the stairs on the outside, and they stop at each landing. I live at the very top. I tried not to rest my hand too heavy on the rail as I climbed because it was about to come off. I unlocked my door and turned on the light and watched the roaches run for cover. I put the record down, got a cold one out of the icebox. Well, actually, it was a plug-in, a refrigerator. But I'd grown up with iceboxes, so calling it that was hard to break. I picked up the record again and took a seat. Sitting in my old armchair with the stuffing leaking out like a busted cotton sack, holding the record again, looking at the dirty brown sleeve, I noticed the grooves were dark and scabby-looking, like something had gotten poured in there and had dried tight. I tried to determine if that has something to do with that crazy sound. Cause something in the grooves make that kind of noise. Didn't seem likely. I thought about putting the record on, listening to it again, but I couldn't stomach the thought. The fact that I held it in my hand made me uncomfortable. It was like holding a bomb about to go off. I had thought of it like a snake once. Alma May had thought of it like a hit-and-run car driven by the devil. And now I had thought of it like a bomb. There was some kind of feeling coming from a grooved-up circle of wax. Early next morning, with the 45 in the glove box, a razor in my coat pocket and the record up front on the seat beside me, I tooled out toward Dallas and the Hotel Champion. I got into Big D around noon, stopped at a cafe on the outskirts where there was colored, and went in where a big fat mama with a pretty face and a body that smelled real good made me a hamburger and sat and flirted with me all the while I ate it. That's all right. I like women, and I like them to flirt. They quit doing that, I might as well lay down and die. While we was flirting, I asked her about the Hotel Champion, if she knew where it was. I had the street number, of course, but I needed tighter directions.
Oh, yeah, honey, I know where it is, and you don't want to stay there? It's deep in the color section and not the good part, that's what I'm trying to tell you. And it don't matter you're brown as a walnut yourself. There's folks down there will cut you and put your blood in a paper cup and mix it with whiskey and drink it. You're too good looking to get all cut up and such. There's better places to stay on the far other side.
I let her give me a few hotel names like I might actually stay at one or the other. But I got the address for the Champion, paid up, giving her a good tip and left out of there. The part of town where the Hotel Champion was just as nasty as the lady had said. There were people hanging around on the streets and leaning into corners, and there was trash everywhere. It wasn't exactly a place that fostered a lot of pride. I found the Hotel Champion and parked out front. There was a couple fellas on the street eyeing my car. One was skinny, one was big. They were dressed up with nice hats and shoes, just like they had jobs. But if they did, they wouldn't have been standing around in the middle of the day eyeing my Chevy. I pulled the 45 out of the glove box and stuck it in my pants at the small of my back. My coat would cover it just right. I got out and gave the hotel the gander. It was nice looking if you were blind in one eye and couldn't see out the other. There wasn't any doorman, and the door was hanging on a hinge. Inside, I saw a dusty stairway to my left, a scarred door to my right. There was a desk in front of me. It had glass hooked to it that went to the ceiling. There was a little hole in it low down on the counter that had a wooden stop behind it. There were fly specks on the glass, and there was a man behind the glass, perched on a stool, like a frog on a lily pad. He was fat and colored, and his hair had blue blanket wool in it. I didn't take it for decoration. He was just a nasty son of a bitch. I could smell him when he moved the wooden stop. It stank like armpits and nasty underwear and rotten teeth. I could smell old cooking smells floating in from somewhere in the back. Boiled pig's feet and pig's tails that might have been good about the time the pig lost them. But now all that was left was a rancid stink. There was also a reek like cat piss. I said, "Hey, man, I'm looking for somebody."
"You want a woman, you gotta bring your own,"
the man said.
"But I can give you a number or two. Of course, I ain't guaranteeing anything about them being clean."
"No, I'm looking for somebody who's staying here. His name is Tootie Johnson."
"I don't know no Tootie Johnson."
That was the same story Alma May had got. "Well, all right, you know this fella." I pulled out the photograph and pressed it against the glass.
"Well, he might look like someone got a room here. We don't sign in and we don't exchange names much."
"No, a class place like this?"
"I said he might look like someone I seen,"
he said.
"I didn't say he definitely did."
"You fishing for money?"
"Fishing ain't very certain,"
he said. I sighed and put the photograph back inside my coat and got out my wallet and took out a $5 bill. Frog Man saw himself as some kind of greasy high roller.
"That's it. $5 for prime information."
I made a slow and careful show of putting my $5 back in my wallet. "Then you don't get nothing," I said. He leaned back on his stool and put his stubby fingers together and let them lay on his round belly.
"And you don't get nothing neither, jackass."
I went to the door on my right and turned the knob. Locked. I stepped back and kicked it so hard I felt the jar all the way to the top of my head. The door flew back on its hinges, slammed into the wall. It sounded like someone firing a shot. I went on through and behind the desk, grabbed Frogman by the shirt and slapped him hard enough he fell off the stool. I kicked him in the leg and he yelled. I picked up the stool and hit him with it across the chest, then threw the stool through a doorway that led into a kitchen. I heard something break in there and a cat made a screeching sound. "I get mad easy," I said.
"Yeah, I see that,"
he said, and held up a hand for protection.
"Take it easy, man. You don't hurt me."
That was the plan. The look in his eyes made me feel sorry for him. I also felt like an asshole. But that wouldn't keep me from hitting him again if he didn't answer my question. When I get perturbed, I'm not reasonable. "Where is he?"
"Do I still get the $5?
"No," I said. "Now you get my best wishes. You want to lose that?"
"No, no, I don't."
"Then don't play me. Where is he, you toad?"
"He's up in room 52, on the 5th floor.
"Spare key?" He nodded at a rack of them. The keys were all nails, and they all had little wooden pegs on the rings with the keys. Numbers were painted on the pegs. I found one that said 52, took it off the rack. I said, "You better not be messing with me."
"I ain't. He's up there. He don't never come down. He's been up there a week. He makes noise up there. I don't like it. I run a respectable place."
"Yeah, it's really nice here. And you better not be jerking me."
"I ain't, I promise."
"Good. And let me give you a tip. Take a bath and get that shit out of your hair. And those teeth you got ain't looking too good. Pull them. And shoot that fucking cat, or at least get him someplace better than the kitchen to piss. It stinks like a toilet in there." I walked out from behind the desk, out in the hall, and up the flight of stairs in a hurry. I rushed along the hallway on the 5th floor. It was covered in white linoleum with a gold pattern in it. It creaked and cracked as I walked along. The end of the hall had a window, and there was a stairwell on that end, too. Room 52 was right across from it. I heard movement on the far end of the stairs. I had an idea what that was all about. About that time, two of the boys I'd seen on the street showed themselves at the top of the stairs, all decked out in their nice hats and such, grinning. One of them was about the size of a Cadillac, with a gold tooth that shone bright when he smiled. The guy behind him was skinny, with his hand in his pocket. I said, "Well, if it isn't a pimp squad." "You funny, nigga," said the big man. "Yeah, well, catch the act now. I'm going to be moving on to a new locale." "You bet you are," said the big man. "Fat ass behind the glass down there, he ain't paying you enough to mess with me," I said. "Sometimes, 'cause we're bored, we just like messing."
"Say you do."
"Uh-huh,"
said the skinny one. It was then I seen the skinny guy pull a razor out of his pocket. I had one, too. A razor work, it's nasty. He kept it closed. Big guy with the gold tooth flexed his fingers and made a fist. That made me figure he didn't have a gun or a razor. Or maybe he just liked hitting people. I know I did. They come along toward me then, and the skinny one with the razor flicked it open. I pulled the .45 out from under my coat, said, "You ought to put that thing back in your pocket," I said. "Save it for shaving."
"Oh, I'm fixing to do some shaving right now," he said.
I pointed the .45 at him. The big man said, "That's one gun for two men."
"It is,"
I said, "but I'm real quick with it. And frankly, I know one of you is going to end up dead. I just ain't sure which one right yet."
"All right then," said the big man, smiling. "That'll be enough."
He looked back at the skinny man with the razor. The skinny man put the razor back in his coat pocket, and they turned and started down the stairs. I went over and stood by the stairway and listened. I could hear them walking down, but then all of a sudden they stopped on the stairs. That was the way I had it figured. Then I could hear the morons rushing back up. They weren't near as sneaky as they thought they was. The big one was first out of the chute, so to speak, come rushing out of the stairwell and onto the landing. I brought the butt of the .45 down on the back of his head, right where the skull slopes down. He did a kind of frog hop and bounced across the hall and hit his head on the wall, and went down and laid there like his intent all along had been a quick leap and a nap. Then the other one was there, and he had the razor. He flicked it, and then he saw the .45 in my hand.
"Where did you think this gun was going to go?" I said. "On vacation."
I kicked him in the groin hard enough he dropped the razor and went to his knees. I put the .45 back where I got it. I said, "You want some, man?" He got up and come at me. I hit him with a right and knocked him clean through the window behind him. Glass sprinkled all over the hallway. I went over and looked out. He was lying on the fire escape, his head against the railing. He looked right at me.
"You crazy cocksucker! What if there hadn't been no fire escape?"
"You'd have had your ass punched into the bricks. Still might." He got up quick and clambered down the fire escape like a squirrel. I watched him till he got to the ground and went limping away down the alley between some overturned trash cans and a slinking dog. I picked up his razor and put it in my pocket with the one I already had, then walked over and kicked the big man in the head, just because I could. I knocked on the door. No one answered. I could hear sounds from inside. It was similar to what I had heard on that record, but not quite, and it was faint, as if coming from a distance. No one answered my knock, so I stuck the key in the door and opened it, and went straight away inside. I almost lost my breath when I did. The air in the room was thick, and it stunk of mildew and rot and things long dead. It made those boiled pig's feet and that pissing cat and that rotten-toothed bastard downstairs smell like perfume. Tootie was lying on the bed, on his back. His eyes were closed. He was a guy usually dressed to the top, baby, but his shirt was wrinkled and dirty and sweaty at the neck and armpits. His pants were nasty, too. He had on his shoes, but no socks. He looked like someone had set him on fire and then beat out the flames with a 2x4. His face was like a skull. He had lost so much flesh, and he was as bony under his clothes as a skeleton. Where his hands lay on the sheet, there were blood stains. His guitar was next to the bed, and there were stacks and stacks of composition notebooks lying on the floor. A couple of them were open and filled with writing, Hell, I didn't even know Tootie could write. The wall on the far side was marked up in black and red paint. There were all manner of musical notes drawn on it, along with symbols I'd never seen before. Swiggles and circles and stick figure drawings. Blood was on the wall, too, most likely from Tootie's bleeding fingers. Two open paint cans, the red and the black, were on the floor, with brushes stuck up in them. Paint was splattered on the floor and had dried in humped-up blisters. The guitar had blood stains all over it. A record player, plugged in, sitting on a nightstand by the bed, was playing that strange music. I went to it right away and picked up the needle and set it aside. And let me tell you, just making my way across the room to get hold of the player was like wading through mud with my ankles tied together. It seemed to me as I got closer to the record, the louder it got, and the more ill I felt. My head throbbed. My heart pounded. When I had the needle up and the music off, I went over and touched Tootie. He didn't move, but I could see his chest rising and falling. Except for his hands, he didn't seem hurt. He was in a deep sleep. I picked up his right hand and turned it over and looked at it. The fingers were cut deep, like someone had taken a razor to the tips. Right off, I figured that was from playing his guitar. Struck me that to get the sounds he got out of it, he really had to dig in with those fingers. And from the looks of this room, he had been at it non-stop until recent. I shook him. His eyes fluttered and finally opened. They were bloodshot and had dark circles around them. When he saw me, he startled, and his eyes rolled around in his head like those little games kids get where you try to shake the marbles into holes. After a moment, they got straight, and he said, "Ricky?" That was another reason I hated him. I didn't like being called Ricky. I said, "Hello, shithead. Your sister's worried sick."
"The music," he said. "Put the music back on."
"You call that music?" I said. He took a deep breath, then rolled out of the bed, nearly knocking me aside. Then I saw him jerk, like he'd seen a truck coming right at him. I turned. I wished it had been a truck. Let me try and tell you what I saw. I not only saw it, I felt it. It was in the very air we were breathing, getting inside my chest like mice wearing barbed wire coats. The wall Tootie had painted and drawn all that crap on shook. And then, the wall wasn't a wall at all. It was a long hallway, dark as original sin. There was something moving in there, something that slithered and slid and made smacking sounds like an anxious old drunk about to take his next drink. Stars popped up, greasy stars that didn't remind me of anything I had ever seen in the night sky. A moon the color of a bleeding fish eye was in the background, and it cast a light on something moving toward us. "Jesus Christ," I said.
"No," Tootie said, "is not him."
Tootie jumped to the record player, picked up the needle and put it on. There came that rotten sound I had heard with Alma May, and I knew that what I had heard when I first come into the room was the tail end of that same record playing, the part I hadn't heard before. Music screeched and howled. I bent over and threw up. I fell back against the bed, tried to get up, but my legs were like old pipe cleaners. That record had taken the juice out of me. And then I saw it. There's no description that really fits. It was a thing, all blanket-wrapped in shadow, with sucker mouths and thrashing tentacles and centipede legs mounted on clicking hooves. A bulb-like head plastered all over with red and yellow eyes that seemed to creep. All around it, shadows swirled like water. It had a beak. Well, beaks. The thing was coming right out of the wall. Tentacles thrashed toward me. One touched me across the cheek. It was like being scalded with hot grease. A shadow come loose of the thing, fell onto the floorboards of the room, turned red, and raced across the floor like a gush of blood. Insects and maggots squirmed in the bleeding shadow, and the record hit a high spot so loud and so goddamn strange I ground my teeth. Felt as if my insides were being twisted up like wet wash. And then I passed out. When I came to, the music was still playing. Tootie was bent over me. "That sound," I said.
"You get used to it," Tootie said. "But the thing can't. Or maybe it can, but just not yet."
I looked at the wall. There was no alleyway. It was just a wall plastered in paint designs and spots of blood. "And if the music stops," I said.
"I fall asleep,"
Tootie said.
"Record quits playing. It starts coming."
For a moment, I didn't know anything to say. I finally got off the floor and sat on the bed. I felt my cheek where that tentacle hit me. It throbbed and I could feel blisters. I also had a knot on my head where I had fallen.
"Almost got you,"
Tootie said.
"I think you can leave and it won't come after you. Me, I can't. I leave, it follows. It'll finally find me. I guess here's as good as any place."
I was looking at him, listening but not understanding a damn thing. The record quit. Tootie started it again. I looked at the wall. Even that blank moment without sound scared me. I didn't want to see that thing again. I didn't even want to think about it.
"I haven't slept in days until now,"
Tootie said, coming to sit on the bed.
"You hadn't come in, it would have got me. Carried me off, taken my soul. But you can leave. It's my lookout, not yours. I'm always in some kind of shit, ain't I, Ricky?"
"That's the truth."
"This, though, it's the corker. I got to stand up and be a man for once. I got to fight this thing back, and all I got is the music. Like I told you, you can go."
I shook my head. "Alma May sent me. I said I'd bring you back." It was Tootie's turn to shake his head.
"Nope. I ain't going. I ain't done nothing but mess up sis's life. I ain't gonna do it."
"First responsible thing I ever heard you say," I said.
"Go on,"
Tootie said.
"Leave me to it. I can take care of myself."
"If you don't die of starvation or pass out from lack of sleep or need a water, you'll be just fine." Tootie smiled at me.
"Yeah, that's all I got to worry about. I hope it is one of them other things kills me. 'Cause if it comes for me, well, I don't want to think about it."
"Keep the record going. I'll get something to eat and drink, some coffee. You think you can stay awake a half hour or so?"
"I can. But you coming back?"
"I'm coming back," I said. Out in the hallway, I saw the big guy was gone. I took the stairs. When I got back, Tootie had cleaned up the vomit and was looking through the notebooks. He was sitting on the floor and had them stacked all around him. He was maybe 6 inches away from the record player. Now and again, he'd reach up and start it all over. Soon as I was in the room and that sound from the record was snugged up around me, I felt sick. I'd gone to a greasy spoon down the street after I changed a flat tire. One of the boys I'd given a hard time had most likely knifed it. My bet was the lucky son of a bitch who had fallen on the fire escape. Besides the tire, a half dozen long scratches had been cut into the paint on the passenger side, and my windshield was knocked in. I got back from the cafe, parked what was left of my car behind the hotel, down the street a bit, and walked a block. Car looked so bad now, maybe nobody would want to steal it. I set one of the open sacks on the floor by Tootie. "Both hamburgers are yours," I said. "I got coffee for the both of us here." I took out a tall cardboard container of coffee and gave it to him. Took the other one for myself. I sat on the bed and sipped. Nothing tasted good in that room with that smell and that sound. But Tootie, he ate like a wolf. He gulped those burgers and coffee like they were air. When he finished with the second burger, he started up the record again, then leaned his back against the bed.
"Coffee or not,"
he said,
"I don't know how long I can stay awake."
"So what you got to do is keep that record playing," I said.
"Yeah."
"Lay up in bed. Sleep for a few hours. I'll keep the record going. You're rested. You got to explain this thing to me, and then we'll figure something out."
"There's nothing to figure,"
he said.
But God, I'll take you up on that sleep.
He crawled up into bed and was immediately out. I started the record over. I got up then, untied Tootie's shoes and pulled him off. Hell, like him or not, he was Alma Mae's brother. And another thing, I wouldn't wish that thing behind the wall on my worst enemy. I sat on the floor where Tootie had sat and kept restarting the record as I tried to figure things out, which wasn't easy with that music going. I got up from time to time and walked around the room, and then I'd end up back on the floor by the record player where I could reach it easy. Between changes, I looked through the composition notebooks. They were full of musical notes mixed with scribbles like the ones on the wall. It was hard to focus with that horrid sound. It was like the air was full of snakes and razors. Got the feeling the music was pushing at something behind that wall. Got the feeling, too, there was something on the other side, pushing back. It was dark when Tootie woke up. He had slept a good 10 hours, and I was exhausted with all that record changing, that horrible sound. I had a headache from looking over those notebooks, and I didn't know any more about them than when I first started. I went and bought more coffee, brought it back, and we sat on the bed, him changing the record from time to time, us sipping. I said, "You sure you can't just walk away?" I was avoiding the real question for some reason, like, what in hell is that thing, and what is going on? Maybe I was afraid of the answer.
"You saw that thing? I can walk away, all right, and I can run. But wherever I go, it'll find me. So at some point, I got to face it. Sometimes I make that same record sound with my guitar, give the record a rest. Thing I fear most is a record wearing out."
I gestured at the notebooks on the floor. "What is all that?"
"My notes. My writings. I come here to write some lyrics, some new blues songs."
"Those aren't lyrics. Those are notes."
"I know,"
he said. "You don't have a music education. You just play."
"Because of the record, I can read music, and I can write things that don't make any sense to me unless it's when I'm writing them, when I'm listening to that music. All those marks, they are musical notes, and the other marks are other kinds of notes. Notes for sounds that I couldn't make until a few days back. I didn't even know those sounds were possible. But now, my head is full of the sounds and those marks and all manner of things, and the only way I can rest is to write them down. I wrote on the wall because I thought the marks, the notes themselves, might hold that thing back and I could run. Didn't work."
"None of this makes any sense to me," I said.
"All right," Tootie said. "This is the best I can explain something that's got no explanation. I had some blues boys tell me they once come to this place on the south side called Crossroad Records. It's a little record shop where the streets cross. It's got all manner of things in it, and it's got this big color guy with a big white smile and bloodshot eyes that works the joint. They said they'd seen the place, poked their heads in, and even heard Robert Johnson sounds coming from a player on the counter. There was a big man sitting behind the counter, and he waved them in. But the place didn't seem right, they said, so they didn't go in. But you know me, that sounded like just the place I wanted to go. So I went. It's where South Street crosses a street called Way South. I go in there, and I'm the only one in the store. There's records everywhere, in boxes, lying on tables. Some got labels, some don't. I'm looking, trying to figure out how you told about anything, and this big fella with a smile comes over to me and starts to talk. He had breath like an unwiped butt, and his face didn't seem so much like black skin as it did black rock. He said, 'I know what you're looking for.' He reached in a box and pulled out a record, didn't have no label on it. Thing was, that whole box didn't have labels. I think he's just messing with me, trying to make a sale. I'm ready to go, 'cause he's starting to make my skin crawl. Way he moves ain't natural, you know. It's like he's got something wrong with his feet, but he's still able to move, and quick-like. Like he does it between the times you blink your eyes.' He goes over and puts that record on a player, and it starts up. And it was Robert Johnson. I swear it was him. What, no one could play like him. It was him. And here's the thing. It wasn't a song I'd ever heard by him, and I thought I'd heard all the music he put on wax.
Tootie sipped at his coffee. He looked at the wall a moment, and then changed the player again. I said, "Swap out spots and I'll change it. You sip and talk. Tell me all of it." We did that, and Tootie continued.
"Well, one thing comes to another, and he starts talking me up good. And I finally ask him how much for the record. He looks at me, he says, 'For you, all you got to give me is a little blue soul. And when you come back, you got to buy something with a bit more of it till it's all gone and I got it. 'Cause you will be back.' I figured he was talking about me playing my guitar for him, 'cause I told him I was a player, you know, while we was talking. I told him I had my guitar in a room I was renting, and I was on foot, and it would take me all day to get my guitar and get back, so I'd have to pass on that deal. Besides, I was about tapped out of money. I had a place I was supposed to play that evening, but until then, I had maybe $3 and some change in my pocket. I had the rent on this room paid up all week, and I hadn't been there but 2 days. I tell him all that, and he says, 'Oh, that's all right. I know you can play. I can tell about things like that. What I mean is, you give me a drop of blood and a promise, and you can have that record.' Right then, I started to walk out, 'cause I'm thinking, this guy's nutty as a fruitcake with an extra dose of nuts. But I want that record. So I tell him, 'Sure, I'll give him a drop of blood.' I won't lie none to you, Ricky. I was thinking about nabbing that record and making a run with it. I wanted it that bad. So a drop of blood, that didn't mean nothing. He pulls a record needle out from behind the counter, and he comes over and pokes my finger with it, sudden-like, while I'm still trying to figure out how he got over to me that fast. And he holds my hand and lets blood drip on, get this, the record. It flows into the grooves. He says, 'Now you promise me your blues-playing soul is mine when you die.' I thought it was just talk, you know, so I told him he could have it. He says, 'When you hear it, you'll be able to play it. And when you play it sometime when you're real good on it, it'll start to come like a rat easing its nose into hot dead meat. It'll start to come.' 'What will?' I said. 'What are you talking about?' He says, 'You know.' Next thing I know, he's over by the door, got it open, and he's smiling at me. And I swear, I thought for a moment I could see right through him, could see his skull and bones. I've got the record in my hand, and I'm walking out. And as soon as I do, he shuts the door, and I hear the lock turn. My first thought was, I got to get this blood out of the record grooves, because that crazy bastard has just given me a lost Robert Johnson song for nothing. I took out a kerchief, pulled the record out of the sleeve and went to wiping. The blood wouldn't come out. It was in the notches, you know. I went back to my room here, and I tried a bit of warm water on the blood in the grooves, but it still wouldn't come out. I was mad as hell. Figured the record wouldn't play where that blood had hardened in the grooves. I put it on and thought maybe the needle would wear the stuff out. But as soon as it was on the player and the needle hit it, it started sounding just the way it had in the store. I sat on the bed and listened to it 3 or 4 times. And then I got my guitar and tried to play what was being played, knowing I couldn't do it. 'Cause though I knew that sound wasn't electrified, it sounded like it was. But here's the thing. I could do it. I could play it. And I could see the notes in my head. And my head got filled up with them. I went out and bought those notebooks, and I wrote it all down just so my head wouldn't explode, 'cause every time I heard that record and tried to play it, them notes would cricket-hop in my skull.
All the while we had been talking, I had been replaying the record.
I forgot all about the gig that night,
Tootie said.
I sat here till morning playing. By noon the next day, I sounded just like that record. By late afternoon, I started to get kind of sick. I can't explain it, but I was feeling that there was something trying to tear through somewhere, and it scared me, and my insides knotted up. I don't know any better way of saying it than that. It was such a strong feeling. Then while I was playing the wall there, it came apart the way you seen it, and I seen that thing. It was just a wink of a look, but there it was, in all its terrible glory. I quit playing, and the wall wobbled back in place and closed up. I thought, damn, I need to eat or nap or something, and I did. Then I was back on that guitar. I could play like crazy, and I started going off on that song, adding here and there. It wasn't like it was coming from me, though. It was like I was getting help from somewhere. Finally, with my fingers bleeding and cramped and aching, and my voice gone raspy from singing, I quit. Still, I wanted to hear it, so I put on a record. And it wasn't the same no more. It was Johnson, but the words were strange. Not English. Sounded like some kind of chant. And I knew then that Johnson was in that record as sure as I was in this room. And that chanting and that playing was opening up a hole for that thing in the wall. It was the way that fella had said. It was like a rat working its nose through red-hot meat. And now it felt like I was the meat. Next time I played the record, the voice on it wasn't Johnson's. It was mine. I had had enough, so I got the record and took it back to that shop. The place was the same as before, and like before, I was the only one in there. He looked at me and comes over and says, "You already want to undo the deal. I can tell. They all do. But that ain't going to happen." I gave him a look like I was going to jump on him and beat his ass. But he gave me a look back, and I went weak as a kitten. He smiled at me and pulls out another record from that same box, and he takes the one I gave him and puts it back and says, "You done made a deal, but for a lick of your soul, I'll let you have this. See, you done opened the path. Now that rat's got to work on that meat. It don't take no more record or you playing for that to happen. Rat's got to eat now, no matter what you do." When he said that, he picks up my hand and looks at my cut-up fingers from playing. And he laughs so loud everything in the store shakes. And he squeezes my fingers until they start to bleed. "A lick of my soul?" I asked. And then he pushed the record in my hand. And if I'm lying, I'm dying. He sticks out his tongue, and it's long as an old rat snake, and black as a hole in the ground. And he licks me right around the neck. When he's had a taste, he smiles and shivers like he's just had something cool to drink.
Tootie paused to unfasten his shirt and peel it down a little. There was a spot halfway around his neck, like someone had worked him over with sandpaper.
"A taste," he says. And then he shoves this record in my hand, which is bleeding from where he squeezed my fingers. Next thing I know, I'm looking at the record, and it's thick. And I touch it, and it's two records, back to back. He says, "I give you that extra one because you tasted mighty good. And maybe it'll let you get a little more rest that way, if you got a turntable drop. Call me generous and kind in my old age." Wasn't nothing for it but to take the records and come back here. I didn't have no intention of playing it. I almost threw it away. But by then, that thing in the wall, wherever it is, was starting to stick through. Each time the hole was bigger, and I could see more of it, and that red shadow was falling out on the floor. I thought about running, but I didn't want to just let it loose. And I knew deep down, no matter where I went, it would come too. I started playing that record in self-defense. Pretty soon, I'm playing it on the guitar. When I got scared enough, got certain enough that thing was coming through, I played hard, and that hole would close, and that thing would go back where it come from. For a while, I figured, though, I ought to have some insurance. You see, I played both them records, and they was the same thing, and it was my voice, and I had never recorded or even heard them songs before. I knew then what was on those notes I had written. What had come to me was the countersong to the one I had been playing first. I don't know if that was just some kind of joke that record store fella had played on me, but I knew it was magic of a sort. He'd give me a song to let it in, and he'd give me another song to hold it back. It was amusing to him, I'm sure. I thought I had the thing at bay, so I took that other copy, went to the post office, mailed it to Alma in case something happened to me. I guess I thought it was self-defense for her. But there was another part was proud of what I had done, what I was able to do. I could play anything now, and I didn't even need to think about it. Regular blues, it was a snap. Anything on that guitar was easy, even things you ought not to be able to play on one. Now I realize it ain't me. It's something else out there. But when I come back from mailing, I brought me some paint and brushes. Thought I'd write the notes and such on the wall. I did that, and I was ready to pack and go roaming some more, showing off my new skills. And all of a sudden, the thing is pushing through. It had gotten stronger because I hadn't been playing the sounds, man. I put on the record, and I've pretty much been at it ever since. It was all that record fella's game, you see. I got to figuring he was the devil, or something like him. He had me playing a game to keep that thing out and to keep my soul. But it was a 3-minute game. 6 if I'd have kept that second record and put it on the drop. If I was playing on the guitar, I could just work from the end of that record back to the front of it, playing it over and over. But it wore me down. Finally, I started playing the record nonstop, and a half for days. The fat man downstairs, he come up for the rent. But as soon as he'd use his key and crack that door, hear the music, he'd get gone. So here I am, still playing, with nothing left but to keep on playing or get my soul sucked up by that thing and delivered to the record store man.
Tootie minded the record, and I went over to where he told me the record store was with the idea to put a boot up the guy's ass, or a 45 slug in his noggin. I found South Street, but not way south. The other street that should have been way south was called Backwater. There wasn't a store either, just an empty unlocked building. I opened the door and went inside. There was dust everywhere, and I could see where some tables had been, because their leg marks was in the dust. But anyone or anything that had been there was long gone. I went back to the hotel, and when I got there, Tootie was just about asleep. The record was turning on the turntable without any sound. I looked at the wall, and I could see the beak of that thing chewing at it. I put the record on, and this time, when it came to the end, the thing was still chewing. I played it another time, and another, and the thing finally went away. It was getting stronger. I woke Tootie up, said, "You know, we're going to find out if this thing can outrun my souped-up Chevy."
"Ain't no use," Tootie said.
"Then we ain't got nothing to lose," I said. We grabbed up the record and his guitar, and we was downstairs and out on the street faster than you can snap your fingers. As we passed where the toad was, he saw me and got up quick and went into the kitchen and closed the door. If I'd had time, I'd have beat his ass on general principles. When we walked to where I had parked my car, it was sitting on 4 flats, and the side windows was knocked out, and the aerial was snapped off. The record Alma May had given me was still there, lying on the seat. I got it and put it against the other one in my hand. It was all I could do. As for the car, I was going to drive that Chevy back to East Texas like I was going to fly back on a sheet of wet newspaper. Now I got to smelling that smell, one that was in the room. I looked at the sky. The sun was kind of hazy, green even. The air around us trembled like it was scared of something. It was heavy like a blanket. I grabbed Tootie by the arm, pulled him down the street. I spied a car at a curb that I thought could run, a V8 Ford. I kicked the back side window out, reached through and got the latch. I slid across the seat and got behind the wheel. Tootie climbed in on the passenger side. I bent down and worked some wires under the dash loose with my fingers and my razor, hot-wired the car. The motor throbbed and we was out of there. It didn't make any kind of sense. But as we was cruising along, behind us, it was getting dark. It was like chocolate pudding in a big wad rolling after us. Stars was popping up in it. They seemed more like eyes than stars. There was a bit of a moon, slightly covered over in what looked like a red fungus. I drove that Ford fast as I could. I was hitting the needle at 110. Didn't see a car on the highway. Not a highway cop, not an old lady on the way to the store. Where the hell was everybody? The highway looped up and down like the bottom was trying to fall out from under us. To make it all short, I drove hard and fast and stopped once for gas, having the man fill it quick. I gave him a bill that was more than the gas was worth, and he grinned at me as we burned rubber getting away. I don't think he could see what we could see, that dark sky with that thing in it. It was like you had to hear the music to see the thing existed, or for it to have any effect in your life. For him, it was daylight and fine, and life was good. By the time I hit East Texas, there was smoke coming from under that stolen Ford's hood. We came down a hill, and it was daylight in front of us, and behind us, the dark was rolling in. It was splitting, making a kind of corridor, and there was that beaked thing, that whatever it was. It was bigger than before, and it was squirming its way out of the night sky like a weasel working its way under a fence. I tried to convince myself it was all in my head, but I wasn't convinced enough to stop and find out. I made the bottom of the hill, in sight of the road that turned off to Alma Maze. I don't know why I felt going there mattered, but it was something I had in my mind. Make it to Alma Maze and deliver on my agreement. Bring her brother into the house. Of course, I hadn't really thought that thing would or could follow us. It was right then the car engine blew in an explosion that made the hood bunch up from the impact of thrown pistons. The car died and coasted onto the road that led to Alma Mae's house. We could see the house, standing in daylight, but even that light was fading as the night behind us eased on in. I jerked open the car door, snatched the records off the back seat, and yelled to Tootie to start running. He nabbed his guitar, and a moment later we were both making tracks for Alma Mae's. Looking back, I saw there was a moon back there, and stars, too. But mostly there was that thing, full of eyes and covered in sores and tentacles and legs and things I can't even describe. It was like someone had thrown critters and fish and bugs and beaks and all manner of disease into a bowl and whipped it together with a whipping spoon. When we got to Alma Mae's, I beat on the door. She opened it, showing a face that told me she thought I was knocking too hard. But then she looked over my shoulder and went pale, almost as if her skin was white. She had heard the music, so she could see it, too. Slamming the door behind us, I went straight to the record player. Alma Mae was asking all kinds of questions, screaming them out. First to me, then to Tootie. I told her to shut up. I jerked one of the records out of its sheath, put it on the turntable, lifted the needle, and the electricity crackled and it went dark. There was no playing anything on that player. Outside, the world was lit by that blood-red moon. The door blew open. Tentacles flicked in, knocked over an end table. Some knick-knacks fell and busted on the floor. Big as the monster was, it was squeezing through, causing the door frame to crack. The wood breaking sounded like someone cracking whips with both hands. Me and Alma Mae, without even thinking about it, backed up. The red shadow, bright as a campfire, fled away from the monster and started flowing across the floor, bugs and worms squirming in it, but not toward us. It was running smooth as an oil spill toward the opposite side of the room. I got it then. It didn't just want through to this side. It wanted to finish off that deal Tootie had made with the record store owner. Tootie had said it all along, but it really hit me then. It didn't want me and Alma at all. It had come for Tootie's soul. There was a sound so sharp I threw my hands over my ears, and Alma Mae went to the floor. It was Tootie's guitar. He had hit it so hard it sounded electrified. The pulse of that one hard chord made me weak in the knees. It was 100 times louder than the record. It was beyond belief and beyond human ability. But it was Tootie. The red shadow stopped, rolled back like a tongue. The guitar was going through its paces now. The thing at the doorway recoiled slightly, and then Tootie yelled, "Come get me! Come have me! Leave them alone!" I looked. and there in the faint glow of the red moonlight through the window, I saw Tootie's shadow lift that guitar high above his head by the neck, and down it came, smashing hard into the floor with an explosion of wood and a springing of strings. The bleeding shadow came quickly then, across the floor and on to Tootie. He screamed. He screamed like someone having the flesh slowly burned off. Then the beast came through the door as if shot out of a cannon. Tentacles slashed, a million feet scuttled, and those beaks came down, ripping at Tootie like a savage dog tearing apart a rag doll. Blood flew all over the room. It was like a huge strawberry exploded. Then another thing happened. A blue mist floated up from the floor, from what was left of Tootie. And for just the briefest of moments, I saw Tootie's face in that blue mist. The face smiled a toothless kind of smile, showing nothing but a dark hole where his mouth was. Then, like someone sniffing steam off soup, the blue mist was sucked into the beaks of that thing, and Tootie and his soul were done with. The thing turned its head and looked at us. It made a noise like 1,000 rocks and broken automobiles tumbling down a cliff made of gravel and glass, and it began to suck back toward the door. It went out with a sound like a wet towel being popped. The bleeding shadow ran across the floor after it, eager to catch up, a lap dog hoping for a treat. The door slammed as the thing and its shadow went out, and then the air got clean, and the room got bright. I looked where Tootie had been. Nothing. Not a bone. Not a drop of blood. I raised the window and looked out. It was morning. No clouds in the sky. The sun looked like the sun. Birds were singing. The air smelled clean as a newborn's breath. I turned back to Alma May. She was slowly getting up from where she had dropped to the floor. It just wanted him, I said, having a whole different kind of feeling about Tootie than I had before. He gave himself to it. To save you, I think. She ran into my arms and I hugged her tight. After a moment, I let go of her. I got the records and put them together. I was going to snap them across my knee, but I never got the chance. They went wet in my hands, came apart and hit the floor and ran through the floorboards like black water. And that was all she wrote.